everyone, and welcome back to OTTB on Tap. I'm Neve.
And I'm Emily. Hey, Neve, what's on tap today?
Today, we're introducing four of the trainers we'll be following on their journey to the 2025 Retired Racehorse Makeover. Each of them is bringing a unique perspective and a different goal to the table, and we're so excited to share the start of their stories with you.
This episode is all about first impressions. You'll meet each trainer in a quick, probably about 15-minute spotlight to learn a bit about who they are, how they got started with horses, and what drew them to off-track thoroughbreds, and also a little bit about the horse they'll be bringing to the makeover this year.
And don't worry, we'll be diving deeper into each of their stories in future full-length episodes. For now, let's get to know our first trainer. We're kicking things off with Stephanie Parcote, joining us from Corfu, New York. She is a busy mom balancing family life, bringing along OTTBs, and she's passionate about showing that you can do it all.
Welcome, Stephanie. We are so glad to have you here. Can you start by just telling us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I'm a stay-at-home mom to three boys, ages 12, 9, and 6. I live on a small farm in Western New York with them and my husband. We raise pigs, but we also have a Jersey cow, sheep, rabbits, and of course the horses. We have a 40-year-old pony that we've had for more than 10 years. He's taught all my boys how to ride. We have my Percheron thoroughbred mare, who I've had longer than I've known my husband, and our two thoroughbred geldings.
Awesome. Can you tell us a little bit about what life looks for you these days inside and outside of the barn? What's your kind of day-to-day like?
Sure. Yeah. So I'll just tell you a little bit of a typical day. So most days I get up at 5 a.m. and I head over to the stable where my oldest son and I take lessons. I clean stalls over there in the morning. So that's how I start my day. Most of the day is cleaning stalls and feeding over there. We're lucky that it's a great place only 5 minutes away. And we love being a part of that barn. Then I come home, I tag my husband out because he's been home with the boys in the morning, and I step into my homemaking, homeschooling role because I also homeschool the boys. So Wow. We do homeschooling in the mornings, and then after lunch, we're pretty much free to do our activities. So most of the time that involves horses, obviously. I'm really lucky that my oldest son, who's 12, is really into horses as well and rides and shows along with me. He's actually riding my 2024 makeover horse this year as his show horse.
That's great.
Yes. In the afternoons, we might be taking a lesson. We keep our horses at home, so we haul our horses over to the same stable where I work in the mornings. He might be taking a lesson, I might be taking a lesson, or we might just be doing some hacking at home or some training at home. And then, of course, it's dinner, more chores. And then once the boys are in bed, I can finally get some time to sit down, relax, maybe talk to my husband for 2 minutes without interruptions. So
that's a lot.
I'm curious, do you have like a riding facility at home? Do you have a ring and stuff like that? Or do you have to haul over to the other barn for that?
Yeah. So our ring is in progress. It's just basically a grass field. And my husband dug a track around, which is basically a moat right now in April. And it's been unrideable, but that's in the process. Yeah. I am lucky we have a large gravel road that goes through our farm, and we do ride on that. We can actually, it's long enough, we can go back and forth and do a couple miles.
Nice.
So we try to utilize what we have, and hauling out is what we need to do.
Yeah, awesome. And how did horses first come into your life?
Yeah, so a lot of people are surprised when they hear this, but I actually didn't start riding until I was 14. I was doing other activities that weren't really working for me, the typical soccer and tried softball, things like that. And I'd always liked horses. My mom's always liked horses. And I said, I want to start taking lessons. And soon after, I got my first horse, a gray quarter horse mare, and I kept her at home. And it's been nonstop from there.
Yeah. And I feel like when you have horses, when you're young and you actually keep them at home, you're learning all of the horse husbandry aspects, whether you're doing all of it or not, you're aware of it and you're immersed in it in a little bit of a different way.
Yeah. A fun story. When I got her, I got her from a 4-H leader that just lived down the road, and we didn't have a horse trailer or anything. So I just sat in the back of my uncle's pickup truck and held the lead rope, and she trotted behind the truck, amazing, the 2 miles down the road.
Classic.
So. I feel like we've done things like that too.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, yeah, for sure. I definitely remember being at one property where our horses were over a mile, like that's where they were turned out, and to actually ride them, we would have to bring them back and forth. And so we'd either pony them or we would stick our hand out the back of someone's Subaru or something.
Yeah.
You just do whatever works. It's fine. When did thoroughbreds first start to play a role in your horse journey?
Not until recently, actually. I have to admit, I was one of those people that believed the stereotypes about OTBs. They were, thoroughbred was okay crossed with something, but a full thoroughbred was a no. But I have a good laugh about that now, honestly, because I could never live without one at this point.
Oh, I love that.
So tell us a little bit about your general approach or mindset when working with horses. Which or what feels most important to you?
It's hard to sum up because I feel like there's so much to that. But I guess what comes to mind first is just allowing them to be a horse. So lots of forage, lots of friends, minimizing stall time, making sure they can socialize, providing enrichment and movement. And that's the basis, and go from there.
Yeah, I love that. I feel like even though thoroughbreds that have raced come from such a stalled environment, they leave the stall to go walk or to go train or to race. And they just, I feel like so many of them do better the more time that they have outside.
Oh, they love to be outside. They love, they thrive outside.
They're like, don't put me back in that stall.
Yes. Yes. And it's very interesting because obviously they're all a little bit different, but I feel like by and large, they all just really are like, I could have had this life the whole time. This is amazing. But there are plenty of tracks that do have the ability to winter them and at farms, partner farms and things like that. Sure. So they do get some of that. I know at Fair Hill, for example, they get turned out in a lot of the barns and they do hack out quite a bit. So definitely varies from place to place, but I would imagine in New York, it's probably not happening that much.
Yeah, I'm very close to Finger Lakes racetrack. Yeah. So I know that's dangerous. They do close the track, obviously, and then the horses are boarded and turned out for the winter. So I know those horses do get that, but I don't think the two that I have probably had that experience, knowing they came from bigger trainers and facilities.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah.
What do you love the most about working with off-the-track thoroughbreds?
I actually love how versatile they are. I love trying new things and new disciplines. Like, and I love how I could easily go chase cows one day with them and go in a hunter show the next day. They literally can do anything. And I just think that's so much fun.
So let's talk about your makeover horse. What is their jockey club name and what do you call them around the barn?
Yeah, so Sterling Honor is my makeover horse this year. We just call him Sterling and he just turned 4.
All right. And how did you find Sterling?
So Sterling, actually, I was not planning on getting another horse really at the time, as that kind of goes sometimes. But we were in Kentucky for the makeover last year and we went to the New Vocations open house. And my husband was walking around with the kids. All the boys were there. My husband was there. And my other horse, my 2024 makeover horse, Best Idea, is by Honor Code. So when he saw the name Sterling Honor, he knows a little bit about the bloodlines and stuff and inquired, oh, is this guy by Honor Code? And he was. And my husband just loved him. He was super sweet with the kids. And I was somewhere else. I didn't even see Sterling right away. And everyone came running over to me telling me all about this horse. Mom, Mom, you have to see this horse. So we went over and checked him out, thought about it overnight, talked to Amanda there at the facility, and went and looked at him the next day. And she rode him for us. And he was just awesome. My kids got to brush him. They got to hang out with him. And he was just perfect.
And you had a spot on the trailer.
And we had a spot on the trailer. We had to for a couple bales of hay in Kentucky and give somebody our tack box to take back to New York. But we made room.
That's so funny. Yeah, that's always dangerous. We're like, well, there is another spot on the trailer.
Right. Yeah.
Definitely. Don't need another horse. Oops.
And my husband really wanted to get him. And I was thinking to myself, what am I going to say? No, my husband wants to buy me a horse.
Yeah, we're like, put him on the trailer, let's go.
Sounds like a great but dangerous quality to have in a husband.
Yes, he's very supportive and encouraging. And sometimes too much, I have to say, I don't think I'm quite ready for that. But a lot of the time, he's right on the mark with encouraging me and supportive.
I love it. What are you hoping to explore with Sterling this year? Do you have any particular goals? What types of disciplines are you pursuing? Or are you just seeing where things go?
Yeah. So when I took Bestie to the makeover last year, we did competitive trail and we came in 10th place. And that was one of my goals, was to be in the top 10. And I accomplished that. So my goal for this year is to go in the competitive trail again and try to also be successful. A personal goal. Can I retrain another horse? They may be by the same sire, but they are completely different. Mm-hmm. Can I go and accomplish this again with a different horse? So definitely competitive trail. And then I didn't do a second discipline last year just because it was overwhelming going to the makeover. I just wanted to focus on one discipline. But this year I feel obviously a lot more comfortable having done it once. And so I think we're going to do dressage just because I think Sterling is really leaning towards that. And I think he would really do well with that.
So what you're saying is I'm going to have to compete against you at the makeover. And I've been watching your videos furiously. And I'm like, oh, God.
Perfect. Little rivalry.
And I like it. No, it's so funny because when I posted in the RRP trainers group and I said what I was going to do after I went to the obstacle course, so many people actually PM'd me. I think you were one of them. And just full support, just telling me all of these different things to practice and think about. And I was like, this is so nice. Yeah. I really liked it.
Yeah. Competitive trail is so fun. The theme last year was The Wizard of Oz. It was like over the rainbow. It was just so cute. And I'm a huge really Wizard of Oz fan. So when they announced that, I was just overjoyed. It was so
fun. When did they announce the theme?
It was when we were driving down there. So it was like Sunday, Monday.
Because I love a good theme. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I do have a quick question. We didn't ask this kind of in your intro, but what discipline would you say you typically ride in or you've trained in?
Hunters is my typical discipline. Yeah. Yeah. But
that's cool.
I'm not in a huge hurry to jump my horses, and being that it's 2'6", that's the height that I'm, you know, the most comfortable with. So to take a green horse and then jump 2'6", which is at my max comfort level, it's
I'm in the same boat with you. I think my horse will be a talented jumper, but it's such a truncated timeline. Yeah. And it's, I've been thinking a lot about the advice that Chelsea gave last year when she was like, you just got to make sure your horse is broke on the flat. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're getting there.
Yeah. I actually think Sterling's going to be a great hunter. Yeah. I actually don't think he's going to love competitive trail, but sorry, buddy, we're doing it.
But didn't you take it? Anyway, we'll get into it in your main episode. I don't want to give away too many secrets. Before we wrap up your intro, what's something that you hope people take away from your story as we go forward?
I hope that I can encourage other moms to keep pursuing their passion, even if it seems daunting because they now have to do it with kids in tow. I just want them to know it really is doable and it's so worth the effort.
Yeah, that's a great message. Wow.
I totally love that. Thank you so much for joining us today, Stephanie. We are so excited to follow in your journey. I do have one last question, curveball I'm throwing in here for you. Oh. What is one word that you use to describe a thoroughbred?
Joy. They bring us so much joy.
Good one. I love that. Next, we're heading to Pennsylvania to meet someone with a soft spot for dressage and a strong belief in OTTBs.
Our second trainer is Harley Whitaker, a dressage rider and trainer from Kirkwood, Pennsylvania, who is passionate about proving that OTTBs belong in the dressage ring just as much as any warm blood.
Harley, welcome to OTTB on Tap. We're so excited to get to know you. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here. I'm a dressage rider and trainer, and I have a passion for helping to bring out the best of horses and riders in a methodical and classical approach. I've been a crazy horse girl basically my whole life, and I'm grateful that I get to do what I love every day.
So what does your day-to-day look like both in and out of the saddle?
Most of the day is spent at the barn. From morning till mid-afternoon, I'm usually riding or teaching. And if I'm not at the farm, you can find me working out or pushing myself to do some crazy challenge, sleeping, because there's not enough hours in a day.
Yes. And what first got you into horses?
So I don't come from a horsey background, like a horsey family or anything. I have loved animals since the womb. And I think I've always been drawn to horses, but I didn't have the chance super early to get familiar with them. So I would say I was in middle school. There was a farm close to where I lived that was a therapeutic riding facility, and they had volunteers come out and help, and I took that opportunity and was hooked ever since.
That's actually how I got back into horses after a really long break. I started just sidewalking, and then they were like, do you want to exercise ride some of them? And then next thing you know, I'm looking for a trainer and slippery slope.
I do have an additional question here. Have you always been in the Kirkwood, Pennsylvania area, or did you grow up here?
No, I actually grew up in Maryland. Not far, but I grew up in Maryland. And I think I've been in the PA area since like high school. So for a while.
Gotcha. Cool. You're very close to us, Coatesville and Neves and Media.
Oh, you're very close.
Yeah.
And how did you find your way into the world of dressage?
So I think one of the people that actually taught me like up-down lessons, taught me how to canter, she had a horse that she wanted me to take a lesson on with someone she knew. It was a friend of a friend, and it happened to be a dressage trainer, and I had a lesson, and I was hooked from that moment. It was Anisha Del Duco, actually. She owns major farm in Oxford, and she asked me to be a working student. I started working there, and I think I had a lesson on one of her horses and started feeling certain things, and I was like, ooh, I like that. So I got hooked.
Oh, that's amazing. And then, so where do off-the-track thoroughbreds fit into your story, and how did you get started with them?
So I think throughout my journey, I've always been around a lot of different breeds. I never felt like I was partial to one specific breed, minus middle school when I started at that therapeutic place. I was obsessed with Norwegian Fjords.
Oh my God. That makes sense.
Yeah. They're like they're so cute.
Obviously, Warmbloods ended up having a big place in my life, but I worked for Silva and Boyd for a few years. So I was around a lot of the eventing crowd, even though I did dressage. And I think I saw a lot of thoroughbreds in that. And I just had them on my peripheral vision, basically, throughout my whole journey.
So what is something that you really appreciate about OTTBs, especially in the dressage world?
Hands down, their work ethic. I think everybody knows that they have engines and they just have so much try and they'll go all day. And I think that is 100% the work ethic part that I appreciate with dressage, and especially getting into the upper levels. I think any horse can do dressage at the lower levels, and the basic foundations is for everyone. But as you work your way up the levels and the difficulty goes up, you really have to have a horse that wants to do it and wants to try and have that. And I think thoroughbreds is a never-ending cup of that.
Yeah, that's such a good way to put it. You put everything I think we've been trying to say in this podcast for the last year and a half into two beautiful sentences. It's really good. Tell us a little bit about the horse that you're bringing to the makeover, what their jockey club name is, their barn name, and just some details about them.
Sure. His jockey club name is Juancho.
Do you watch Married at First Sight?
I don't.
Oh my God.
Is there a Juancho?
Yes.
Oh no.
The other day I was playing this golf game on my phone, and I was playing against somebody named Juanito, and that was one of Juancho's nicknames on the show. So it's really stupid inside joke.
That's so funny.
Juancho is very cute. I like it.
Okay, good. So his jockey club name is Juancho. I don't want to call him Juancho, so I call him Jack. He's a 16-hand plain bay. He's just turned 5. He's very smart and level-headed. He's a little goofy, but overall, I think he's a really good egg.
And so how did you end up with him, and what stood out to you early on?
So this is a bit of a story. So I was in Aiken, South Carolina over the winter, and I don't know why, but I just kept having thoroughbreds come across my Facebook feed. And in the back of my mind for a while now, I have been thinking about taking on like a resale project and doing that with a thoroughbred. And I don't know, it just got more glaring to me that I wanted to do that. And I reached out to one of my long-term clients and biggest supporters. And I was like, hey, I was just wondering, what do you think if we decided to get a thoroughbred and flip it and go down that route? And she 100% was all in. And I was like, wow, okay. And as soon as she said that, I already knew which one I had in mind, which was this Juancho horse, because I had seen him and I saw his video and I thought he was a really good mover. And every description said that he had a good temperament. And I don't know why I was just so drawn to him, but I was. Side note, my heart horse and the horse that I have brought up the levels is named Jax, and he's also owned by this specific supporter. And so as I'm talking to this lady who owns Juancho and she's telling me all about him, she says, yeah, Jax stands really good on the cross ties and does this and that. I'm like, wait, Jax? And she's, yeah. And I was like, oh my God, like I'm screwed. This is the one.
This is it. Yeah. Yeah.
However, we can't have more than one Jax in the barn, so we're going to name him Jack. So that's a little bit confusing for everyone, but we're getting there.
I like that. I think we're all a little bit superstitious, and I don't know. We all look for those little signs from the universe as horse people.
My nephew is Jax, so there's another one.
It's funny because I don't think it's a really common name.
No.
Hear it every
No, I'm sure you were like, I'm sorry, what?
I was. Yeah. And when I told my client, she was like, oh, it's meant to be. I was like, yep, it was.
I love it. Are there any goals or dreams that you have for this particular partnership? Or are you just trying to see just about getting through your journey to the makeover at this stage?
I think my goal right now is just to put a strong, solid foundation on him and make sure that he's confident and happy in his work. I want to have a successful outing at the RRP. Like I said, he's supposed to be a resale, but I think my client and I are just going to take it one day at a time and see how he blossoms throughout the season. We might wait. We might keep him for a little bit. We'll see. So,
cool. Awesome. I do have a little bonus question for you before we to wrap up here. What is one word that you would use to describe an OTTB?
I think versatile.
Excellent. I like that one.
Yeah.
We just like to ask everybody that. Put them on the spot. So before we let you go, what's something that you hope listeners take away from your journey?
I think just that you can do whatever you set your mind to and not to rush the process based on what you see everyone else doing. Trust your gut.
Yeah, that was me taking a really deep inhale and being like, it's really hard not to.
Yeah.
It's so hard, especially I feel like not to bring this back to me, but like in my particular journey, there's a lot of like early success and then we've stalled out for various reasons. And we're hopefully going to be on the other side of that really soon. But you feel like any time that you miss out feels like a lot of time in a way.
I can completely relate to that too.
Social media, you see everybody else out and about and doing things and you think you should be there too. So it can be tough.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Harley. Where can listeners find you to follow along on social media?
Yeah. On Facebook, I'm Harley Whitaker or HW Dressage. On Instagram, it's HW_Dressage.
Awesome. Great. Thank you so much, Harley. We'll be cheering you on in and out of the dressage ring until the makeover.
Great. Thanks so much.
From the dressage ring to the eventing field, our next trainer is an adult amateur with a love for sport horse bloodlines and a strong online following.
Next up is Amanda Chance joining us from Florida. She's an eventer, sport horse breeder, and the voice behind the popular blog and podcast Breed, Ride, Event. This will be her first RRP, and her partner is a seasoned war horse.
Amanda, welcome to OTTB on Tap. Can you start off with a little bit about who you are and what your life looks like both in and out of the saddle these days?
Thanks for having me, first of all. Yeah. The second part is much more complicated. So I am all over the place. If anyone follows me on social media and you're like, what the hell is this girl doing? I don't know either, honestly. Every day is different. So I guess out of the saddle first, that's less interesting. So I used to be corporate and I quit that a couple years ago. So I took all of my side hustles and hobbies and made it into a cobbled together career, if you could call it that. So I have my blog, which is where everything started, which everybody, if you know me, you would probably know me from that. And that turned into Patreon. And then that evolved into social media management. I started doing it for a couple friends and then just built up more from there. So I do social media management. I do a lot of copywriting. The writing in the blog has just transferred over to actually doing it for money. I used to write for Eventing Nation, and that turned into more than it used to be. I still don't write a ton compared to a lot of the other girls on staff because most of my stuff is like breeding related and not everybody's that interested in that. And I also do copywriting for a lot of equestrian brands. Ride IQ is probably my biggest one. I write most of their copy. And then I just do a bunch of little things on the side. I have MagnaWave. I tech for my vet for pre-purchases sometimes. I work during the winter season retail some with one of my friend's businesses. A lot of weird random things put together to make money.
That's familiar.
All of them are horse related now. It's basically every side hustle that every horse girl has ever had just shoved into one person, which is fine with me. Great. It's way better than corporate for me. I was slowly dying. In the saddle, I have four horses. Three of them are rideable. One's a broodmare. I'm eventing at preliminary with my homebred. And then I have Rubes, my RRP horse. And then I have my retired eventer that I evented through preliminary. So they're all rideable at the moment. I'm only showing one currently until Rubes gets going. But I take a lot of lessons. I started the beginning of this year in more of a program with my preliminary horse because I live in Ocala. I want to ride better than I do. I started taking a lot more lessons, which has been tricky to afford, but it's only money.
Exactly.
So you can always make more.
You can't take it with you.
Can't take it with you. There's ways to make money, right? So I started doing more lessons with him. So I feel like I'm constantly either doing something work-related or driving my trailer out somewhere to go do something. So
yeah.
It's all horse-related, whether I'm riding or not, basically.
That leads me to my follow-up question, which is how do you balance everything between your breeding program at the farm and riding, blogging, actually riding your horses, etc.?
Carefully. And sometimes not very well, to be honest with you.
And you, if I'm remembering correctly, you don't drink coffee.
I don't. God, you're trying to make an enemy of me already. I don't drink coffee.
Well, one of our very best friends, Nikki Shearer, who's an equine eye surgeon at New Bolton and one of the hardest working people I know, she doesn't drink coffee either. And to me, I'm fascinated by it.
I don't drink coffee. So I don't do well with caffeine. I'm very caffeine sensitive. So I'm a late diagnosed on the spectrum person.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it has to do with that, but I'm very caffeine sensitive. It basically just makes me feel like everything terrible is happening really fast. And I can't. I'm a slow processing person. And if you speed it up, it just stresses me out. So I've learned the hard way that caffeine is a no-go. I tried to drink a Celsius a couple weeks ago because I hadn't slept in 3 days. And I was like, it'll be fine. I thought I was going to die. My heart was pounding out of my chest for 10 straight hours. And I just felt like the same amount of crap, just really fast.
Oh,
I was like, this is terrible. How is anyone doing? It was terrible. I don't drink any caffeine generally. I don't drink beer and I don't drink wine.
So fueled by Taco Bell and ice cream.
And spite and just rage, I guess. Rage. I don't know. Just awesome. I'm not the perkiest person, but things get done. I'm a morning person too, and that just makes it even worse. 6 a.m., I'm like, hey, let's go. Let's do stuff.
No, the worst.
I know.
I used to drive from Philly an hour and a half out to the barn in the morning, and I'd be like, can you just shut up? I had so much coffee, and I'd be like, I haven't had any coffee yet because I literally woke up as she was like pulling up outside my house. So, yeah. I get it.
Yeah, I naturally wake up at 4:30. I never set an alarm. Everybody is going to hate me. Why did you guys make me talk about this?
No, I think those are going to be very impressed.
This is my least likable quality. It actually sucks.
I am admiring it.
Yeah, right.
But the problem is I literally can't sleep past 6 a.m. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what time I went to sleep. I can't do it. I just wake up and I'm like, I have horses to feed and I have to just go.
Yeah.
Stick to my routine, and if I don't, it just stresses me out. I can't go back to sleep.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just like this, but I'm also terrible past like 8 p.m. Done.
Yeah.
Don't talk to me.
That tracks, right? Horrible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. I'm useless in the evening. Anyway, back to your question.
Yeah.
For me, I'm really careful about time management. This is where you can tell that I'm on the spectrum. My schedule is sacred. I'm very into schedules. and my priorities. So what are my big priorities for the day work-wise or horse-wise? And what do I have to do today work-wise that I'm committed to? And how do I make it work? Like every morning, that's what my brain is doing at 4:30 before I get out of bed. And I have lists everywhere. Sometimes I remember everything. Sometimes I don't. Usually I do. luckily, most of what I do is really flexible because I do a lot of cobbled together things. I don't have that commitment like I used to and like most amateurs do, where you're tied to a computer from 9 to 5 and you're expected to be right. in meetings. And I've done that. I understand that. I did that for 18 years. I totally get it. And I understand that the way I've structured my life now gives me the privilege of flexibility, which is worth a lot. I make less money now, but I have more flexibility and more time to devote to like the horses. Yep. And that's the trade-off that I've made. Yeah. It's also not uncommon to see me. I do a lot of work between 4:30 a.m. and 6:30 a.m. I do a lot of work between 5 p.m. and 8:30 p.m. I'll run inside in the middle of the day and shoot off a bunch of emails or set up something for somebody and all of this kind of stuff. I keep weird hours and yeah. it tends to be 7 days a week. I try to keep Tuesdays where I don't do that much, but that doesn't happen hardly ever. so it's a little tricky, but it's afforded me a lot of flexibility, which is worth it to me.
Yeah,
I have to prioritize the things that make me money, obviously, because horses are very expensive. But I also recognize that I did upset my life by quitting my 9 to 5 and moving to Ocala because of the horses. And I try to prioritize that as well. I'm never going to be a Boyd or anybody at the top level, but I do want to do the best I can with the horses I have. And I take that pretty seriously. I'm pretty committed to learning and trying to improve. So it's just prioritizing and scheduling, basically.
Yeah.
And that can change day to day. It just depends.
Yeah. Yeah. So have thoroughbreds always been part of your program?
Yes. So I'm going to date myself with this one, but I grew up riding in the 90s, and those days the thoroughbred was still king. It was when the warmbloods had started to take over, but there were a lot of thoroughbreds competing to a high level in every sport still. And I did the hunter jumpers at that time, so there were less thoroughbreds, but there were still a lot of thoroughbreds. I was a barn rat. I was at the barn 6 days a week. I rode whatever my trainer would let me, essentially. And it was a lot of thoroughbreds. A lot of thoroughbreds came through the sale program. So I rode a lot of them. My first horse was a thoroughbred. I took him to the East Coast with me after high school to be a working student. That's where I learned what eventing was. Started eventing on him. After that, I don't think I have gone since that very first horse without owning at least one thoroughbred at any given time. So I've had a lot of them. Some were resales, most were resales. Some were failed resales. Some were intentionally kept. but it's once you pop, you can't stop kind of situation.
Yeah.
Especially for me, because I've never had a lot of money.
Yeah.
I don't come from money. I've never had a high paying job. I've always had to figure out how to make it work and find the best horse for the money I had.
Yeah.
And that's almost always a thoroughbred.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and I think a little bit of luck comes into that as well. I think knowing what you like about horses and then taking a chance on something has definitely paid off for you.
Yeah, even when I didn't intend it. Yeah.
So this is your first RRP, Amanda. What made you decide to enter this year?
So I actually entered last year, too. But I didn't go because I ended up selling that horse in the spring. And that wasn't my intention, but the perfect person came along that absolutely loved him. And it was a forever home that I thought he would just really thrive in. And I really wanted to keep him until after RRP, but I feel like someone better is not going to come along. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
So I sold him 2 months after I entered RRP. So that didn't happen. So I finally was like, I'll just keep an eye out. I didn't have a lot of money to spend. I never do. And if something comes along, I'll enter. If it doesn't, I won't. I've followed RRP and the makeover since the beginning, and it's always been really interesting to me. I love thoroughbreds. I've always loved thoroughbreds. I've grown up on them. Some of my friends have done RRP, and it looked really amazing. And that would just be a really cool bucket list item to do. I love thoroughbreds, and I think RRP has done so many good things for the thoroughbred and for thoroughbreds in sport that if I can be a part of it in any way, heck yeah, of course I want to do that. That sounds fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Tell us about your horse. What's his jockey club name and barn name and just general details about him?
So his name is Ruby Blue, with the blue spelled B-L-E-U. I usually call him Rubes. They called him Ruby. I had a hard time with that in the beginning. So now I call him like Ruby Boy, Rubes. He has a lot, Rubalicious. He has a lot of names. So he's 11. I got him last summer. So he raced until he was 10. He's by the thoroughbred stallion Mesner, who is a three-quarter brother to Malibu Moon. Mesner is out of Macumba, who was the same dam as Malibu Moon. Malibu Moon was just straight APND, and Mesner was Bernardini, so a son of APND. So three-quarter to Malibu Moon. And then his dam is Ruby Soul, who's by an Irish stallion. Perfect Soul, who's by Sadler's Wells. And then on the very bottom, he's got Carson City and Hawaii. So Hawaii. He stood out to me. Yeah, his pedigree was definitely eye-catching, and he raced 100 times and won $940,000. So he's really what I was looking for. He's a true warhorse, which is so cool to me.
Yeah, and we'll get into it a little bit more when we get into like your full episode, but there's some really cool details about the owners and breeders and everything about him. Yeah. Also, we actually featured Ruby Blue on one of our OTTB Evaluates episode. Was it volume 2, Emily?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was just looking
so you can check that out if you want to hear Emily and I dissect him from a conformational standpoint and his racing record and his breeding a little bit. And of course, that's where I forgot who Hawaii had influenced from the good old days, but nobody can forget Malakai. So how did he come into your life? And was there anything in particular besides the fact that he was a true war horse that stood out to you?
So I really wanted a few things in particular, like war horse. Raced 50 times. I think that's so cool. I wanted something nicely bred for sport. I'm a pedigree nerd. I'm not breeding him, obviously. He's a gelding, but I do think pedigree tells you something. Mm-hmm. Pedigree was interesting. I wanted a horse built like an athlete. I like a horse that looks like it's standing still and looks like it could jump. You know what I mean? If you looked at enough horses.
Yeah.
I really wasn't looking for one when I came across him. It was like July. Who wants to buy their RP horse in freaking July? But Fidelia Stables posted him on Facebook, and his ad was like, they literally
are you
to me is what it sounded like.
I think we all bullied you. Like everybody that knew you and saw that ad literally sent it to you and were like, obviously this is your horse, Amanda.
Yeah. I mean, they were like 10-year-old, clean legs, no vices, raced 100 times, like kind, but forward thinking, professional racehorse, could use a little bit of a break, has a fan club. Owner wants references, wants frequent updates. I was like, well, let me tell you how annoying I can be. You're going to be like, please stop sending me pictures. I was like, I'm annoying. I can put him on social media.
Warm?
Yeah, he was a little out of my budget, but I just made a comment. I didn't even reach out. I just made a comment and I was like, oh, he's a little out of budget, but he sounds right up my alley. And then a bunch of people commented. I think Neve, you were one of them. I was like, yeah, this is totally up your alley. And the trainer reached out to me and we ended up talking on the phone for an hour. And at the end, she was like, let's just figure out how to make this happen in your budget. Let's pull some strings because I feel like this is a perfect match. And I was like,
yeah,
I guess I have a horse coming. So.
Sometimes it's just meant to be.
Things just happen. It's not even my fault. I didn't do it.
You didn't wire the money. Oops.
It just appeared. I didn't even note it.
So what are your hopes for him this year?
I think because I have a competition horse, I have the liberty, and you, if you might understand this, you have the liberty of doing what the horse wants to do. Mm-hmm. And when the horse wants to do it, you're not like, oh, I have to do all these competition things. I have to make this work in my sports and all of this. I have some freedom with that. Obviously, I want him to want to do my sport and I want to go take him to competitions. But I have the liberty of taking my time and seeing what he wants to do and getting a feel for him. I just want to do the horse justice in whatever format that is. If he wants to go lay down the most amazing eventing trip anyone's ever seen and win it, I'd be thrilled. If he shows up there and he's just a good ambassador for a warhorse and happy to be there, I think that's, to me, just as successful.
Yeah.
He doesn't owe anyone anything. That, right. He's done enough. He doesn't have to prove himself.
Yeah.
So to me, my job, it just feels like I have to do justice to him and I have to do right by him and I have to put him in good situations. And I really want him to be an ambassador for the warhorse because I think people overlook horses his age and horses with his record. I think they assume things about horses like that. And I just would like him to be an example of maybe you should look a little harder at one that's a little older and not just assume that they can't be a good sport horse.
Yeah, sure. Before we wrap up your intro, what's something you're most excited to share with the OTTB community this year?
For me, it's just the journey. That's what horses are. Like, that's what life is. It's a journey. It's ups and downs. It's challenges and triumphs. It's good and bad. And we do live in a world where we feel like we only want to show people the good things. And I try to not be that. I don't feel obligated to share things I don't want to share, but I also want people to understand that everybody has ups and downs and that's just part of it. And I think that really creates a good sense of community. And I want people to feel like they can relate to the journey and maybe see some things of themselves in my struggles or whatever goes well. Because to me, it all comes back to community. That's what RRP really is at the end of the day. It's about the horses, but it's also about all the people that have made that possible for the horses to be there. So to me, that's the most exciting part of it.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah, we love that. Just the sense of OTTB community that's really just since we started this podcast has just become so evident to us. And it's really
very special.
Cool. Yeah. Thank you so much, Amanda. We can't wait to follow along. Speaking of that, where can listeners find you online?
Oh, boy. My blog is breedrideevent.com. Ruby Blue also has his own Facebook page, Ruby Blue, BLEU. He has his own page. And then my Instagram is breedrideevent, just one word, all thrown together. So any of those places. So I post a lot in my Instagram stories. So like, if you want to see behind the scenes, that's the place to go, really.
And then one last question. What is one word you would use to describe an OTTB?
Oh, man. So I knew this question was coming, which I felt... what almost made it worse. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
There's so many good words and I've listened to you guys in your podcast and everybody has such good words and it's a lot of the same ones that come up over and over. And I was like, God, what's a good word that I had to literally go to the dictionary. But I think for me, I landed on magnanimous me.
I like that.
I think that one really captures several qualities in one word.
And finally, let's welcome back a returning trainer who's no stranger to this journey.
Our last trainer today is Chelsea O'Brien, who's back for another makeover season. She's based in Virginia, a proud ambassador for Pastured Place. And this year she's working with not one, but I think two OTTBs.
Chelsea, welcome back to OTTB on Tap. For anyone just tuning in for the first time, can you give us a quick intro about you and your business?
I'm Chelsea O'Brien, and I am from Berryville, Virginia, and I'm a horse trainer and a farm manager of a farm here in Berryville, Virginia. I specialize in retraining and rehoming, rehabbing off-track thoroughbreds. My business primarily right now focuses on restarting horses for people. I do have some other breeds occasionally, but mostly my farm consists of 90% thoroughbreds and like a handful of other creatures, like two quarter horses, a gypsy vanner, and a farnling pony.
Oh, nice.
So how have things changed for you since last year? When you were also on the podcast.
Yeah, it's been a wild year. Things have definitely grown a lot. I have a wait list for horses for training. I've taken a lot of horses. I've gotten a lot of horses in. Found some really great homes. I'm still loving life with my BFF, Yubi, and who is still up for adoption. But in the meantime, we're going to still hang out and have fun and go try new things. But yeah, it's been like a huge success of a year, and it's a little daunting going into another year. Yeah.
So they just keep coming, right?
Yeah, and it's, oh gosh, I have to like up the ante now. Like, we did well last year, now what? That's right, a hard part.
Yeah, that's pressure.
Yeah.
For sure, yeah.
You've got two horses this time. Can you tell us a bit about each of them? Jockey club names, barn names, important details, and stuff like that.
So I'm taking another horse for Pasture Place, and that's the Pepsodent Show, who we call Peppy, also known as Pepster, Pepperoni, Pepper.
Of course.
A million names. Peppy's 16-1 or 16-2. 16-2 hand chestnut, 5-year-old. And the first time I rode him, when I saw him, I said, oh gosh, this is a hunter. And
yeah.
He's flashy, so much chrome, like big blaze face, 3 big white stockings, and then a smaller white sock. And he's just an overall really good boy. He did not race. I think he had 6 workouts. And like we talked about before, Pasture Place is giving opportunities to horses who may be harder to adopt out. So obviously, mm-hmm. Peppy's everybody's dream horse, because who wouldn't want this big, flashy, chromey horse? But the problem is, or not really the problem, but Peppy fractured his sesamoid in training. And I think it was like July or August of his 3-year-old year. And so he had a nice long healing process thanks to Pasture Place. It didn't need surgical intervention or anything like that. But at that point, his racing connections decided it would be better for him to go on and be able to stay sound for a second career, mm-hmm. versus start him late by the time he would have been sound enough to run, he'd be in his 4-year-old year. That's awfully late to make your first start.
Sure.
So now Peppy's with me. And he's fabulous. And then I'm taking a personal horse. So my neighbor next door is a racehorse trainer. And she was so
excited. That's dangerous.
Yeah, I was going to say, that sounds dangerous.
Yeah. Yeah. We talked about one that's sitting in my field right now for maybe next year.
Awesome.
So my neighbor is a racehorse trainer, and I was doing like a little ponying for her in the fall. And she said, I have this one that's going to be a really good barrel horse. And I'm telling you, you should give her a chance. I'm like, I don't know. I don't really need another personal horse. And she's, what if we co-owned her together? And so anyways, we're going by the round pen out back, and I'm on the pony horse, and the babies are following behind us. And they're like, look, Chelsea, that's Fuzzy. So her name's Fuzzy Wuzzy. She's a 4-year-old.
Oh, cute.
She made 4 starts and only made $2,227. But she's very fast, and she's built like a quarter horse. Anyhow, so she's maybe 15-2. She's not a big girl, but she's very stocky. Not a lot of people would peg her as a thoroughbred. And the thoroughbred has a lot of influence on quarter horses, but man, she does not look like a thoroughbred. And anyhow, so we're walking past the round pen, and Diana goes, that's Fuzzy, that's the one. And I was like, oh wow. And she's out there bronking, like bucking and squealing and running. And I'm like, okay. All right.
Yeah, she looks fun.
So anyway, they ran her, and Fuzzy had a soft palate issue, and they tried to do a myectomy. Sometimes when they do those things, the memory of it, when they get to the top of the lane, she was afraid of not being able to breathe because of the soft palate issue. So then she would just quit and shut down at the top running home. So anyhow, so now Fuzzy's going to be a barrel horse.
Cool.
Cool. What are you most looking forward to this time around?
I grew up as a hunter.
Besides meeting us.
Of course. Yes. I am so excited to meet you guys in person. We've talked so many times now that I just can't wait for Kentucky. And of course, when you guys come out and we have our meet and greet at the farm, everybody bring their RRP horses.
That's super fun.
But I'm looking forward to, it's been a number of years since I've legitimately shown the hunters, but I'm really looking forward to trying something different. I think for me, I'm all about proving people wrong. So I feel like sometimes people look at Western riders and say, they can't do this because they're not whatever. And then sometimes Western people look at English people and say, oh, they can't do this because they're too English and this person's too Western and whatever, all of that. So I grew up as a hunter jumper rider, and Peppy's like the hunteriest horse naturally I've ever sat on. And so I'm really excited to do something different, because for the last 2 years with Sally and Newbie, I focused mostly on Western, but I think it's going to be cool to challenge myself to try something different, go outside my comfort zone. It showed a lot as a kid and up until college. Then I had a head injury and I thought that barrel racing would be safer than jumping hunter jumps. I'm really excited about that. I love the process. I'm having a lot of fun training both of them because they're both so completely different, but they're both such great brained horses that it's just fun to push the envelope and do, you know, the all around thing.
For sure. And so it sounds Peppy, you're pretty sure we'll do the hunters, and Fuzzy will do barrels. Do you think you'll do a second discipline, or have you not decided that
yet? I'm going to sign up for two disciplines on both of them because of my experience from the first year going. And I'm not sure that I could have, if I could have gotten my horse right before, since she had some soundness issues when we went, but you just never know. Like, they might not be feeling great. Some people show on Wednesday Is that right? Yeah. Some people show on Wednesday. Some people show on Thursday. Some people show on both, or disciplines. If one of my horses is struggling, say on Wednesday, but the dressage goes on Thursday, or I just want to have the opportunity that if I get there and I only want to do one division, that's great. I can scratch, but I want to sign up for two.
Sure.
So Peppy is definitely,
that's good advice.
Peppy's definitely like the hunters. And then I want to do a Western discipline on him too, anyways, to show that how versatile the thoroughbred is. I'm thinking of either doing Western dressage, or we haven't tried it out yet, but competitive trail isn't out of the realm.
You stay out of my division. Stay out of my division, Chelsea.
I don't think ranch work and Peppy is going to be a thing, but who knows? I just don't know about Peppy and cows. Yeah. I'm not sure about Peppy and cows yet, but that's always my thought, is like, there, some handle it really well and some are like, oh no. And then, and then Fuzzy's definitely 100% through and through going to be a barrel horse. And then I'm not sure, could she do ranch or Western dressage, or do I throw a English division in there? I don't know yet. Seems like a little.
Yeah. You've got some time.
Don't you think, wow, this is flying by. Somebody that I know that's going to RRP keeps putting like something like 200 days to the RRP.
I was just talking about that. And I was like, knock it off. I don't need that in my brain.
Oh my goodness.
No,
that's plenty. That's so much time, guys.
The last
me, I can say that because I'm not riding. It's wonderful. Right.
Meanwhile, she's going to be talking the two of us off a ledge.
That's my job. I'm the ledge talker at the RRP.
Yeah.
Just come talk to me. I've gotten practice with Neve.
Yeah, that's fair. Before we close out, what's one thing you want to share with folks watching your journey this year?
Don't judge. No, just kidding.
I actually think that's really good.
I think everybody's journeys are so different, and the way that people train horses is different. I've been listening to a lot to your stuff with Oscar and stuff, and then I see other people who are really far ahead and I don't feel like I'm there. Mm-hmm. And certain things happen, I'm like, wow, we're making some breakthroughs. And I'm just doing the building blocks. Run your own race.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
But things don't look pretty. I post videos where I'm like, well, it's not very good, but give me a couple months. We're going to polish this up.
Yeah.
So that's what I mean by don't judge. Somebody could be so far ahead in their training and everything's going well, and then something could happen. And
for sure.
We're all just hoping for the best. But
yep.
I tell some of my kids that ride with me that want to learn how to ride off track thoroughbreds, I'm like, listen, you're gonna have to ride like a monkey for a little bit here just to get things.
Yes, it's not pretty.
It's not pretty, but trust the process. And yeah. That's really,
I love that.
That's where I'm at in my process right now.
For yeah. sure. Thank you so much for joining us, Chelsea. We're lucky to have you back on the show for another year. And that is a wrap on our trainer intros. We're thrilled to follow each of these riders and their OTTBs as they prepare for the 2025 makeover. You'll be hearing more from all four of them in upcoming full episodes, where we'll dive deeper into their backgrounds, training philosophies, and progress with their horses. Be sure to follow or subscribe so you don't miss a thing.
And if you're new here, check out our past episodes wherever you get your podcasts and head over to OTTBOnTap.com for more.
If you enjoyed today's episode, we'd love it if you left us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Facebook. And don't forget, if you leave a review, we'll send you some OTTB on Tap stickers as a thank you. You can connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, or TikTok and get in touch with interview suggestions or episode ideas anytime at OTTBOnTap.com. And if you want more from bonus episodes and videos to our Evaluate series and private insiders group, head to OTTBOnTap.supercast.com to join. We always love hearing from you. Cheers.
Cheers.